Hello and welcome to the Haven podcast. It's Andy Malt here. I am the founder of The Haven, which is the home for gentle rebels and quietly creative misfits. And these podcasts are a new way to essentially introduce the monthly themes that we explore inside the membership. And so to give you a good kind of overview, a good taste of what it is that you might expect within the community itself. So through conversations, we allow and kind of invite particular aspects of the themes to emerge from within the core, the broad theme, which then gives us some good jump off points to dive more deeply into over the coming weeks inside the community, depending on, you know, what people are interested in exploring and finding helpful right now. And so October is the month of belonging, and that's what we're exploring today. It was really lovely to be in conversation with Lindsay Celeste and Kendra Patterson, who are both now creative partners in The Haven. So Lindsay Celeste runs the Creation Station Creativity Group and the Sacred Space, which is kind of looking at a more spiritual sort of meditative stuff. And then Kendra is running the writing group, which is called From Burnout to Book. And she's using her story, having gone through burnout as a writer, and gone through all the ebbs and flows of recovery, and to the point where she's just finished her latest novel. And so she's kind of using her own journey as a series of footholds to get some discussions going. But it's a group for writers at any stage, and writers or non-writers, or people looking for support and looking for help with recovery from burnout as well. So absolutely brilliant to have both of them on board. And it feels really great to be getting a sense of how these episodes are working as well. You know, I was really struck by the fact that through speaking with other people, it opens up these themes in ways that I can't imagine exploring on my own. Like you get to see things from different perspectives. And I really love editing these together as well, because I hear things that I don't remember sort of hearing during the conversation itself. It's really weird how much you miss when you're involved in a conversation, and how different memory often is to reality. So I hope you enjoy this. We'd absolutely love to hear, you know, which parts of the conversation particularly spoke to you. Please do leave a comment in the show notes, which you'll find at the-haven.co. Just go and click on the podcast tab in the menu bar and find this episode of Belonging 2021. Or if you're already a Haven member, come and share your thoughts in the monthly theme discussion forum there. It'd be really great to hear what resonates and hear what you'd be excited about kind of learning more about or exploring more for yourself. So let's just get straight into it. So this is the first three-way podcast conversation that I think I've been involved with. I might be wrong. My memory's not great, but I think it is. How about you, Kendra?
Yeah, it's definitely my first three-way.
First. Lindsay?
Yeah, I think it's mine too.
Cool. Just establish that fact as we begin. So, this is the month of belonging in The Haven, and I've been really looking forward to having this conversation, and the fact that I think we'll probably all come at things from slightly different perspectives. And so what I thought would be cool is just to have a little time sharing what you think when you think of belonging, and then we'll use that as a bit of a jump off point for some discussion and see where we go. So Lindsay, I think you've got your little brown piece of...
Yeah, I might have lost it in the shuffle, but I think I remember what I was going to say. For me, belonging, when I hear the word, it's kind of like this settled feeling. Like it feels almost not heavy in a bad way, but kind of like something landed on the ground. Like it's got a place. It's got, it's very much connected to place for me. So that being a physical sensation of like belonging in an environment or at home in my own body. And thinking how much belonging is something I can carry with me if I feel at home in myself. And that if I don't feel comfortable in myself, then there's nowhere I could go where I really feel like I belong. And this, how it feels necessary to experience like not belonging in order, like it's also a contrast for me that I'll enter spaces or environments or mindsets or situations where it's like, oh, like I don't belong here. Like I have to feel that in order to discover what does feel like belonging. And so I don't think it's a place that I would like arrive at one day and be done. Like it feels like a conversation between me and my environment, that is also a process of becoming like becoming somebody who can belong. And that the connection to my natural environment, to like the rivers and the forests and the weather and the seasons, feels like that's the larger conversation of where I belong into. And when I feel more human and more connected to my environment, I feel more like I belong as a person on the planet and as a person in relationship to other people. The connecting to the natural world feels like one of the truest ways I can return to a sense of belonging. And that is what I want to belong to more than anything else.
Nice.
That's where I'll start.
Cool. Let's go around and do all of that and then we'll jump into discussing, I reckon. So, Kendra, do you want to go or shall I?
I'll go just because that resonated so much and it put some ideas into my head. I have a history of feeling like I don't belong. For example, I never felt like I belonged to my own culture, American culture. I left the country when I was a teenager and didn't come back for almost 10 years. I had a friend group in high school that we were just kind of together because we were those nerdy, socially awkward types, but I never really felt like I truly belonged with them. And what I've come to realize at this time in my life is that the problem wasn't that I didn't belong in those scenarios or circumstances or to those people. The problem was that there was something missing in myself. I didn't feel like I belonged in myself. And for me, I suppose I feel that belonging isn't something other people give to me or circumstances can give to me. It's an approach that I have towards my interactions with people and to just how I am in the world.
Cool. I'm looking forward to getting into this. I'm afraid I kind of wrote a whole thing because I'm very kind of jealous of the fact that you can just ad lib. I get myself tangled up if I'm trying to.
But I also kind of like your. I have a little bit of. I don't know if it's definitely respect and maybe envy that you can piece stuff together so nicely beforehand.
Well, we'll see.
And it always sounds ad lib to me. Andrew, honestly, oh, and I don't mean that in a bad way. It always just sounds so ad lib and disorganized. No, you just sound very natural.
I throw in ums and ahs in the middle of reading. Yeah,
let's hear it, Andy.
So, as I've been thinking about belonging this year, I've been drawn back to a word that I used a lot around the theme of creativity in May, which is the word condition. In relation to that topic, I was thinking about conditions as a positive route into the playful, organic experience of creativity. So exploring how to replace our mechanical productivity-obsessed approach with one of organic expansion, creating the right conditions for creativity to grow without us needing to control the process. So it's weird to ponder conditions as an enemy of true belonging. I guess I've been considering the characteristics of unconditional belonging, maybe more than true belonging. Because when we talk about the kind of belonging that we yearn for as humans, it's that sense of belonging outside of our capacity to earn it. It's a desire to be accepted for our beingness and not our doingness, and the longing to just be welcomed despite our flaws, foibles, and failures. In fact, I'd argue maybe the true belonging for all of us comes through our flaws and foibles and failures. And it's why we can't earn, perfect, or fit in enough to achieve a feeling of belonging. It's when we experience our too muchnesses, our not enough, is not enoughs, and the messes of ordinary human suffering, that we experience unconditional belonging in communion with others. Not when we fit into systems that make conditional demands on our thoughts, words, and actions, but when we recognize that we don't truly fit into them. We find communion with one another in our truest, deepest sense when we find ourselves on the outside together in the presence of our failure to fit in. This is a weird kind of belonging because we get so used to wrapping belonging up with ownership and possession, and we've grown adept to seeing every interaction as a transactional point of sale. We judge people through eyes of usefulness. What can I get from this person? What do they need from me? How can I profit from this particular relationship? And so on. We put conditions on everything, and this shapes how we see the world, how we see other people, and how we see ourselves. Everything is transactional and conditional, and so we're left separate and lonely, acting from this place through scarcity and resentment. The system works to enhance these feelings by peddling pretend solutions that make us believe we can overcome them with more of what causes them. So it's interesting to think of that word conditional in relation to our becoming. We're conditioned into behavior and belief, trained that if we want to belong, we must behave in a certain way, believe in certain things, and follow a certain set of spoken and unspoken rules. And as I look at the world around me today, I see that even not fitting in, quote unquote, is in a very real sense conditional. We have to allow for individual creative expression and rebellion and difference, but only within certain boundaries that we define as a crowd, as police as a crowd. You'll soon know if you overstep it because the collective culture will make it known that you've gone too far. But as faithfully as we might try, we won't ever find that feeling of unconditional belonging if we search for it by fitting in. Because to fit in, we've got to gain access to and acceptance from particular groups. And by so doing, we have to keep parts of ourselves hidden in order not to be rejected. And we keep the charade going, placing conditions on others if they want to gain access to the inside. The knowledge that there is an inside places a condition on our belonging and a looming cloud over our head that says, just because you're in doesn't mean you can't be removed. But if you've got nothing to hide, you've got nothing to fear. This is one of the reasons imposter syndrome fascinates me so much. Rather than being a problem to eradicate, I see imposter feelings as a beautiful truth. It actually shows us the conditions of belonging in any given situation. It's the chasm in which unconditional belonging takes place. It manifests in different ways for each of us, but we all experience it. And rather than trying to overcome it, what if this is the very site of our communion, in our incompleteness, uncertainty, and suffering? Maybe this is where we discover meaning, connection, and belonging.
Beautiful. I think you've said it all, Andy.
I said too much.
No, that's amazing.
When I hear you, I feel like there's a bit of an ache feeling of like, oh, like that peace arises from actually having experienced like the feelings that come with not belonging. That like it's like, and now it sounds like you've come through the other side of something to feel a bit of connection, like on the outside with other people. And I think a lot of what I understand of your work in the world, that it is about creating safe spaces for people who don't feel like they belong. But I just feel like that which you have arrived at, like it wasn't easy to get there. You know, like it's painful to feel like you don't belong. At least it has been for me, or it's been painful to leave places of false belonging where there was conditions I couldn't, like you talk about the conditions of being like on the inside or the outside of the group. And I've had a few significant, like having to leave groups that I could couldn't belong to anymore. And that the freedom on the outside of that, of feeling what you're talking about, of like belonging without the conditions, or in, as I was describing, like belonging to a place, being held by the greater cosmos or world, like that's incredible. But it didn't come easily. It didn't come without like the loneliness and tearing feeling of not belonging in places that I thought I did. And I feel like I hear that in your story too, without the anecdotes, like it feels like it's in there.
Mm. That's like, I was trying to work out that difference between the pain of not belonging and the embrace of not belonging, in the sense of, because I've always been like fairly liminal in the sense of not pigeonholing myself to any particular thing, or like even seeing that as like a challenge to, okay, you do it that way, let's get creative about this.
Oh yeah, totally.
But there's a difference in those experiences where they're more void, like they're more like I can't even put a foot into this place where I feel like I need to belong, but I can't. And yeah, there's, I don't know what that difference is, but it's I'd be really interested to hear both of you kind of expand on the belonging to self thing. Like what does belonging to self kind of mean to you?
I think in a way, for me, it's understanding that difference between situations where I feel like I should belong, situations where I feel like I want to belong, and situations where I'm feeling other people don't want me to belong. Hmm. You know what I mean? So, like, when I think back to my high school friend group, there was definitely a feeling of rebelliousness in me that I didn't really want to belong because I didn't identify with their values necessarily. But at the same time, they didn't particularly want me to belong because mm-hmm. I was kind of like, I don't know, maybe the bad girl of the group or something. But to me, there's like this push and pull feeling that's hard to parse. And I think belonging to myself is the recognition of both of those conditions, and realizing that I have a right to, and I can find people who not only will accept me and want me there, but that I also want to be a part of. Mm-hmm. That to me is a big deal, because it's been hard for me my whole life to find people who are my people. And I'm just starting to now in my 40s. So I had to wait a long time.
Yeah, there's been this long time feeling of like, as if I wasn't supposed to be here. Like it all, almost this kind of like mystical, like the world made a mistake, you know, like I wasn't really supposed to be here. Almost like an alien feeling, like, wait, like, what am I doing here? Like everybody else seems to like kind of have this slightly more figured out. I think I want to tell it. Can I tell a story?
Sure. Please do.
This was I've had only a few experiences on psychedelics, and on the last and second one, or second significant one, I had this big looming question of feeling, so I'm not a mother yet. And I was really, this was about 4 years ago, and I was really like struggling with whether I was going to become a biological mother. I was like, I need to answer this question. Like, this is really like, I have to figure this out. My clock is ticking and I need to answer whether I'm going to do this or not. And my understanding of psychedelics is that they can be medicinal and really helpful in the right kind of understanding to unlock different parts of our psyche. I think they need to be treated with reverence and care. So in this case, I went into the experience with this question of like, what wants to be born through me. I thought I won't ask the like specific biological question. I'll broaden it a little bit so I can have like any answer. And I thought, oh, I kind of had like my multiple choice answers picked out. Like, okay, I think I'm going to come out of this experience and I'm going to have either the answer of like a book or a baby or some other creative project that like is the thing I need to do with my life. So it's usually, I think that psychedelics can also be quite playful and they sort of come back with like not the answer you were expecting. And so I was outside at the time and I was walking through a forest that I really knew well. And it felt like the sort of like all the myths of the ages were around me. Like I was encountering these stories in my head and almost like the bushes were going to come alive. And then I thought, no, I don't really need to do that thing right now. Like I don't need to be afraid of the monsters. I don't need to be Robin or Little Red Riding Hood. Like I'm just going to keep walking. And I got to this kind of clearing space in the forest and almost like a song entering my head, like quite suddenly was this line, like, I belong here because I was born here. And in the way that only the obvious things can seem like really funny and like super true. And like, why had I never thought of this before? It was this revelation that like, wait, I was, like, I exist. I was born here on the planet. Like, I have every right to be here. Like, there's no other qualification. Like, I can't think of any other way you get here as a human other than being born. And since I was born, I, as much as anybody else, am allowed to be here. Like, I belong here. And the thing that I get to do with my life, more than birth anything else, is to fully exist as me. Like, that's the biggest thing I could do. That's the truest thing I could do in answer to having been born. And that has immensely stuck with me. Like it was like, oh, I belong here. Like I have as much right as anybody else to be a human and take up space and express myself. And that has changed how I feel in groups and how I feel in my creativity of just really being allowed to exist. I didn't realize how profoundly I didn't think that, like, I felt like I was waiting for permission from somebody. And that was like my cosmic permission to exist. So
I think that's the root of
my self-belonging.
Yeah. You're really going to love my novel. It's about a woman who, it feels exactly that way, that she doesn't really have a right to exist. And I think I also am very familiar with that feeling.
Yeah. Oh, thanks for sharing that story, Lindsay.
You're welcome.
It's really interesting, just that sense of permission and waiting. Like I feel that massively, just constantly just waiting for somebody to be like, yeah, you can do it now. Like you, whatever it is. Yeah. And that realization that, yeah, everybody has the same right to belonging, right to exist. Like, obviously at a level of existence, you know, we create structures and systems that make some people more valuable than others, you know, in different ways. But at that fundamental level, yeah, it reminds me of so last year I kind of explored Alan Watts's ideas around the universe being like people being a symptom of a universe that peoples, which is a beautiful way of
like the wave has, or like the ocean has waves, where the similar thing to the universe,
exactly. And he uses the vision of the apple tree. Like he says, an apple tree apples, and the universe peoples in the same way that an apple tree apples. And it's just something that it can't help but do. It's just a symptom of the way that this universe is. And so kind of he was framing that around ideas of like the myths that we have and the stories that we tell about our place in the world, on the world. And, you know, some of the language, I think language is important around belonging as well. It's really interesting to explore the way that we talk about, you know, being here, like I was put here for a reason, or, you know, I'm like these kinds of things that you don't really notice the way that you talk, but it can like evoke a sense of separateness from the world. We think like I was put here for a reason. That's that you've separated yourself from the world. Whereas that idea of it be, we're just a symptomatic expression of the universe realizing itself, essentially.
It takes the pressure off, doesn't it, to know that all you have to do is just kind of, you're almost along for the ride, and all you have to do is just be who you are, and that's maybe the purpose and goal of life. You don't have to achieve amazing things. Those are almost like maybe the side effects of you being yourself in the world.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah, and it's that sense of belonging before you've done anything. Like, belonging is the pre condition of. There's a positive use of condition. Just of humanity. Yeah. Like it's, we belong before.
And I think you know when you find spaces where you belong in, because of that feeling of. You belonged before you even walked in the door.
Mm.
There's nothing you have to do other than just walk in the door and then just be there.
Mm. What's also coming to mind for me is like the way that I love organizing spaces and thinking about how like belonging in our physical space, how that interaction works, and how a house will feel real, or a studio or an office will feel really good when the things like have a spot where they belong, and kind of like the chaos is when the stuff is not somewhere where it belongs. And then organization or like a calm space is where each thing has a spot where it belongs. And that is not the same as ever, like we're not trying to achieve like something belonging everywhere. Like I don't want to be able to walk into any person's house and be like, oh my goodness, this is my house. Like there is also, I want to not belong some places, you know, and I want, you know, my socks to not belong in the cutlery drawer. Like they don't belong there, and that's good.
They don't.
So on one hand, like everything belongs on the planet, but on the other hand, there's lots of places where things don't belong. And that can actually be like a positive, like helpful thing to recognize. So we don't have to belong everywhere, and that groups that even in as far as like social structures go, I'm fascinated by those edges. Like how do we make edges of groups that are kind but clear so that there is a sense of belonging? Because it's actually like the edge or the container of like, you know, this happens in here and this doesn't, that can actually create the nest that feels safe. You know, so there's some things that don't belong here. I think of even like the haven space, like there's ways of talking or interacting that don't belong there. And if you were to try them, it wouldn't be okay. Like there's people who don't belong there, who would not be welcome. And that's part of what creates the safe space. So how do you hold that belonging for other people in a kind but firm way? Like I'm also interested in that kind of group belonging phenomena.
Yeah, I'm very uncomfortable with that actually, because finding a place where you belong inevitably leads to like what you're just saying. And it's really hard for me to reject others from a space, even when they're clearly not healthy for that space. And I don't know how to like deal with that feeling of wanting to be kind to all the people who are knocking at the door. You know, but you can't have them all come in. You're right.
I suppose that it's an element of like, it's not that people don't belong here. It's that there are expectations or boundaries that like there are ways of acting and interacting that don't belong here.
And I think hopefully in most cases, like as we create spaces in our own, even like in ourselves or our homes or our groups, when we hold a certain kind of energy and sense of self, then most of it is kind of self-sorting. Like the people mm-hmm. who we belong with will find us, and the people who don't won't, like it won't fit. Like I think most mm-hmm. of the time it's actually, it can be kind of passive, like it self-sorts what belongs and what doesn't. Hopefully the times when we actually need to make a difficult stance for something are not that frequent, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
Yeah.
So one of the issues I think that comes along with having a life online is that essentially everyone is there, all the people. And it's not so much a question of self-sorting, it's really a question of psychologically, how much of that do you let in? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So for example, I post a video and most of the comments are really nice, but then I get one that's just nasty. This actually happened to me, so it's been on my mind. And it's like, am I required to listen to that comment? Am I required to let that into my space and let that person belong in my psychological space? Does that question make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and my answer is no. Okay. My first reaction is like, no, hell no, no way. You don't have to.
Okay.
Not at all.
I guess there's a difference between, yeah, you clearly don't have to. No, absolutely not. But then it's, how do you not?
Yeah.
How do you, because, you know, I've been there like constantly, that the whole thing of, you know, you just scroll through all the positive things and then there's something negative written somewhere. It's like, that's the thing you do let in. you always let that in more than all of the more encouraging stuff.
It's such a weird thing.
Like the image of a door or something comes to mind, where it's tricky in this online spaces because I'm still very tactile and physical. So I like, it's easier for me to imagine like, oh, like, you know, somebody knocks on my door and then I choose whether to let them in or not. But in the online thing, it's like all those, the walls are so permeable, you know, it's like,
yeah,
because there's no edges seemingly. It could go anywhere. Like our voices, when we put this out, anybody could hear it. Like it feels so porous. And so I think we have to come up with other ways of either like visualizing or enacting like our own walls around our online presence. Like maybe it's actual barriers of like who you physically block on the platform, but maybe it's also like an imagination, like playful kind of idea of somehow trying to picture like where that world is and how it connects to like the one that's actually you. Like it's as if we have to imagine some kind of like a filter or a fence, or I'm not sure, but it feels to me like we have to get creative around how to understand that world and ourselves so that it doesn't just feel like we're connected to everybody, because it's too much for us to actually like do well. And it's too, like, we're too vulnerable if we actually think that anybody who listens to us is now like sitting next to us on the couch, you know, like it's too invasive. And I don't have the answer for what that visualization is, because I imagine it's different for everybody, but your question gets me thinking about how we have to each personally come up with some way of like boundarying that. And it might even be like an imagination thing, because it's not really happening in physical space. Does that make any sense?
Maybe it's mm-hmm. like I like that contrast between letting someone through the door. So it's like you open the windows, or you open the windows and you're sort of doing your thing, and then that one negative person is like a fly that comes into the window. It's like, you don't belong here.
Yeah, so what's the screen? It's like, keeps the flies on the outside.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. And that's what it is. Like, such a small thing. It might not be a fly, it might be even a mosquito. Like, you know, get a mosquito in your room, it, especially at night, like, that'll keep you up. They're so irritating, yet so small. And they're the thing that you concentrate on. You hear them coming towards you, like, oh, where is it? Yeah.
It's really interesting how a conversation about belonging so easily and inevitably becomes a conversation about how to keep things out.
Mm.
Almost as if belonging has this really vulnerable aspect to it that's very personal. Like, it's not just a question of who do we belong to. We're really asking the question, like, who belongs with us? Mm-hmm. Right? Who do we let in? So there's this, again, this idea that this push-pull, like, who is going to accept me? But who do I want to accept? And what's, yeah. Is there an overlap there?
And I suppose back round to the belonging to self as well is the, you know, those mosquitoes, they're the people that pull you away from yourself. They're the, like, they kind of cause this sense of, like, either I need to be not who I am, I need to change something about what I might naturally want to do, like, or it might be a project, it might be a video, like, there's something about that thing that I've put out into the world needs changing. I need to fit into this other mm-hmm. person's agenda or this other person's way of seeing me in whatever way they see me. And so
you need to hide.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my reaction, not changing myself, but just hiding.
And either way, it's like a rejection of self. It's an unbelonging to self.
Yeah, rejection of self.
Mm. I was noticing how earlier, Andy, you were speaking about language. And then, Kendra, you're talking about this push-pull thing. And I find it fascinating that in the word belonging, in English at least, I would say, okay, I belong here. I belong in this town. I belong in this house. But then also, if I own something, then it belongs to me. Like, it's the same word for both directions. And I think that even linguistically, that's addressing that, like, that two-way tension that we're feeling. So, like, I belong in my house and my house belongs to me. It's actually the same word. And so often we would think that, like, we possess things, but then I like thinking about a place also owning us. Like, maybe, like, if I belong to the place, then it also kind of, like, owns and envelops me. So I just thought it was interesting that when you did that tension both ways thing, it is in the words that we're using as well.
It makes me wonder what in other languages, whether or not these are two different words.
Yeah.
Or the same. Something to research.
Yeah, like the idea of having belongings, possessing things, owning things. I'm really interested in, so, like, in that context of place and space as well, that can something belong to the people or to, you know, everybody in a universal sense? And because, like, I'm thinking in the context of, like, ownership and, you know, private ownership of things, like, is there anything that everybody belongs to everybody?
Well, air would be considered a public common good, right? Something like that.
Mm-hmm. Until it gets, I'm sure that they're finding ways to commodify it.
Yeah, to me, that's, like, really tied to the larger cultural direction we've been going in of trying to, like, appropriate and own as much of the world as we can, that we, like, the sort of mostly Western, the civilization machine has been, like, very continually expanding its reach to include and commodify as much of it as it can, from natural resources to, like, you know, public social services, of things that used to not be commodified. Usually that equals, like, exchange of money involved. And they used to just be kind of, like, in the commons would be a way to talk about it, whether it was land or information or babysitting. Like it was just a common thing that was shared. And now there's this like relentless takeover of it being part of capitalism and therefore like very delineated ownership. So is there something that belongs to everybody? It's like, I think that's where it has to be flipped, where no, like we belong to the world. We are what the universe, like the Alan Watts thing. We are what the universe has expressed. So we belong to that. And we're a part of all that. Not really it's not like we made the universe, you know, like we didn't do this. So it seems like, I think that's where sometimes that Alan Watts-ish idea of like, we are the, you know, the universe expressing itself. It can seem like there, it can easily grow into like, we are the pinnacle and the highest thing that has ever happened. And then we think therefore that we own everything. And I don't think that's what he was saying. I think we are a very amazing expression of the universe, one that is self-aware and can evidently change our environment a lot, but we're not, that doesn't mean that it belongs to us.
But I also think that it doesn't not belong to us. I'm not sure like if the word belong is relevant in that sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was just thinking about because there's a news story at the moment or a kind of a battle that's going on not far from where I live around I think it's like a recycling or a sewage plant that is basically people around it can't have their windows open. Like it absolutely stinks. It's causing illness to people, like local residents. And I was just thinking, you know, in the context of like air belonging to us.
Right.
And when we kind of, like when private capital, or whatever, buys up all of the clean air or the clean areas, or creates areas where people can go to get, you know, taking some nice, clean, fresh forest air. And it's like, well, that's privately owned by whoever might or might not let you into that place. And so there's a kind of almost by default link between like the amount of resources you have maybe as an individual and your ability to get clean air, get clean water, get access to these things that actually, you know, these are abundant. These should be sort of things that everybody has.
Yeah, in that sense, I totally agree with you that should belong to everybody. I think the language gets a little bit confusing there. Mm. Like it's not that we own it exclusively, but it does belong to everybody. Is maybe that what you're getting at, Kendra?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm. That's interesting. Like Kendra talked about your like high school friendship groups and stuff. Like I was reflecting on so when I was like at secondary school, equivalent of high school, I was very like I was in the sort of the crowd that was not really defined. It was like because of like music and things like that. It's like you get to be that sort of aloof type person. And I kind of think back to there were definite groups where you had to do things in order to fit in, and you have to look a certain way or you have to act a certain way. You've got to care about certain things. And I always remember like it was part of this group where there were, I guess there were those sorts of boundaries that you're talking about, Lindsay, like the edges. But they weren't keeping anyone out. They were like, anyone was welcome. And so, you know, like hang out with a lot of musicians, but there would also be people who weren't musicians. They weren't particularly artistic or whatever, but they found a sense of something in that group. It could get too big in terms of like, you can't cope, like, well, I can't cope with more than about three people. So I didn't really hang out with them very much, but I felt like I belonged to that sort of wider thing, whatever that was. I think it was like an almost an undefined it was in its own definition that it had, it found definition, weirdly.
When you talk about that kind of like undefinable belonging, like as if the edges weren't that clear, but you still felt like you belonged in it, even though you couldn't handle all of it, or the full size of the group. It reminds me of the feeling when I now live on Vancouver Island, and for a while lived on the mainland, like the bigger part of Canada. And on the mainland, when I arrived at like a community market or a big like outdoor concert or something, I wouldn't feel like I belonged. Like it's same country, same language, pretty much same, a little bit of different climate, but not that far off. I would just kind of feel like, I don't know, like I feel like I'm visiting here, even though I live here. And it was hard for me to pinpoint, like, is it the dress? Is it the, like, is there some sort of way of talking that I don't know? Is it just because I'm new? Why is it that I don't quite feel like I belong here? And then when I moved back to my hometown, I would walk in a cafe or go to the market and have the opposite experience where I would look around and be like, oh, these are my people. And even if there was a wide variety, like one of the things about my hometown is that it doesn't seem to have like one shtick that it's about. Like it's like, it feels like almost its defining thing is that you can do whatever you want. Like you can be a hippie or a logger or a musician, or like you can kind of just show up in whatever clothes you want and you're there. Like there, I couldn't tell you what you're supposed to look like if you walk around. But that's kind of the thing, like the thing that unites us is like just that sort of soup of it. And that's a really, I think it's beautiful to feel those pockets of where diversity is allowed and still held together in belonging, but you can't even really know what the tie is. I mean, in this case, it's like, we all love living here. That just reminded me of that feeling. And how lovely it is to feel that, like, oh, I'm not a foreigner here.
I think also, though, that has to do with place and geography, because I feel that way as well when I return to the Mid-Atlantic region. I'm a transplant here in the south of the United States. But the funny thing is that when I lived there, I grew up in Wilmington, Delaware. It's a very corporate town. I never felt like I fit in there. I left as soon as I could. But I do think of it, like I think longingly of it sometimes now as my home, because I don't feel like I'm among my people here in the American South. And I've lived here now over a decade, longer than it's going to soon be about as long as I lived in Wilmington, Delaware, you know, within a few years. And I sort of kind of am starting to feel a little bit of those like flashes of this is my place. Maybe a little bit. But the climate is so different here. Just the plants that grow here, it's just all so different. Even the smells, like it doesn't smell like autumn here in the autumn, because there really is no autumn. I don't know. It's weird. Like how long does it take to feel like you belong somewhere? I certainly don't feel like I do here, and I don't expect to ever feel like I do.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder, like sometimes I hear people having the experience of going somewhere they've never been, like not where they were from, and really feeling like they belong there more than where they grew up, which I think is also a beautiful feeling of like, it may be linked to where we grow up, but I think there's another possibility that I don't know if it's why it is, but we could feel like we belong somewhere that we didn't grow up, and to arrive there would have that same feeling.
I've had that feeling living overseas, and I think in a weird way it was easier to not fit in a foreign country than it was to not fit in my own country. And so when I went to live in another country, even one like Japan, very different, in some ways I felt like I belonged more there, even though I was still a misfit. But it was like for for a little while, there was this sweet spot, a certain amount of time I could be in a country where it's like who I really was hadn't yet caught up with me yet. And so I could, it's like I would go overseas to kind of escape myself in a way, and the parts of myself that I wasn't okay with and I didn't feel like I belonged with. And then eventually that self would kind of like catch up with me like a year or so later. And then I would really start to feel like I didn't belong in that country. Mm. That happened to me in Australia after around the 2-year mark, which is when I finally went home. Mm. I started to feel like, I don't know if I belong here after all, because myself, I had caught up with myself.
Mm. That's interesting.
That's well described.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. I'm trying to think of anywhere I've ever felt like I belong. I know that sounds quite sad, but like I've never really, like, so many, I can think of so many experiences where, like, other than, so I have this weird thing with places that if they're empty, if there's no one around, I feel like I belong. Mm. And then as soon as they start filling with people, I feel like a complete outsider. Mm. And a place can completely change. Like, it can feel like a totally different environment, totally different place based on the fact that there are now people. Mm. And my assumption probably stems back to all sorts of things that I, like, won't go into, but because I don't know what they are. But they like this idea that once there are people there, I'm like, they belong. Like, they're the ones that belong here. I don't belong here. Like, I don't know how to belong.
Wow, you've really nailed it. That's exactly how I feel too. Mm. Exactly. How weird is that, that we look at other people and automatically assume that they know what they're doing, that they belong.
Mm. Okay, it's been one of my issues throughout my life with performance. So, like, I could think to there's a handful of gigs that I've done where I've been like, yes, this is it. Like, this is happening. Everything is, you know, just with the audience. Everyone's on the same boat here, going to the same place. But most of the time, I'll be on stage performing, feeling like a complete outsider, looking at people, thinking like, they know I don't belong here. Like, they're really annoyed that I'm sort of making noise and all of this stuff.
When they came to see you.
Yeah, I know. It happens more at places where I'm, so if I'm like a support act, or like this summer I've experienced it with festivals. I need to remind myself in the future, like, it's like properly amped up experience in terms of feeling like, yeah, people, like, nobody, well, a handful of people there to see you, but most people are just there at the festival. And you have to sort of win them round. And I don't like having to win people round. It's an odd thing. I don't know. It's really like, I hate performing in that state because, I'm not belonging to myself or to what I'm doing at that moment. So,
do you think it's self-confidence based? Because I find that as I grow in my self-confidence, I actually don't worry that much about belonging or not belonging when I'm feeling very self-confident. I just kind of assume that I do belong just because that's what I've decided in any given situation. But if I'm feeling insecure, which is, you know, most of the time, I'm going to be honest, I start worrying about belonging issues.
Hmm. Yeah, could be.
There's an image coming to mind of this. When my uncle got married in San Diego, he was staying in this really fancy hotel that was fancier than anything I've ever stayed in. And I remember we walked into the lobby to like meet up with him or something. And there was this guy like walking around in his pajamas in the lobby of the hotel. And at first I was like, whoa, he's like not wearing the right clothes. Like, doesn't he know this is a fancy hotel? And then I noticed like, oh no, he is so sure that he belongs here that he's just wearing his pajamas in the lobby. Cause there's nothing in his mind that is registering that he doesn't belong here. He is so sure that he belongs that he's just lounging anywhere he pleases. And I've remembered that dude often of just thinking like, oh, if I like the, I can relax in places that like the truest sign of feeling like I belong is that I actually relax. And I like figuratively wear my pajamas. And there's a bit of a humor in there where like it takes the veil back a little bit. That, like, maybe the people around me, like maybe they're insecure too, or maybe they like the Emperor's New Clothes kind of feeling, like maybe everybody is just in this grand charade and nobody's really sure what to do anyways. And bringing a little bit of humor into that, I think helps me see like the opportunities to connect with somebody, or it lets me relax into something I might want to do that otherwise I would have been like, oh, I can't do that here. And then I feel more ease and actually more belonging.
Yeah.
How much do you guys work at making other people feel like they belong? Is that something that's important to you?
I think it's, I want to make people feel like in certain spaces welcome and like comfortable or safe. Like I want there to be kind of a, like, I'm not going to hurt you kind of feeling to the spaces or interactions I have. But I don't think, I feel like it's up to me to create the belonging. Like if in those conditions, like maybe that will result in them feeling like they belong, but it's like, I don't know yet whether they're a match for the situation. So I just kind of make the space as the way that I feel or is appropriate and good. And then I guess that's that self-sorting piece again. Like if I spent too much effort into making this particular person feel like they belong, I'd probably be steering the whole project or space to my guess as to who they are, which chances are they're, you know, if they're, they might not be even presenting who they really are. So I could be like totally warping my thing to make them feel like they belong. And we could end up in this charade of like false belonging. So I think I focus more on the, like the welcoming safe space kind of idea. And then that either fits with where they are at or not.
So is that comes back to that word conditions. I'm now seeing it positively in terms of conditions for safety, for people to feel comfortable. And those expectations, as you said, kind of coming back to that stuff that we talked about earlier in terms of everyone is welcome to belong, but these are the conditions, not the conditions on which you must sort of, to which you must adhere in terms of changing yourself. But it's like, these are the conditions that mean this place can be what it is. And if that feels good to you, then great. If not, then great, whatever. But yeah, like I think I would echo that. You know, what Lindsay's just said in terms of nurturing safety and comfort, and but not like I think I have at points in the past sort of pandered to a particular person and making sure that they're okay and they belong, and actually you end up neglecting other people to start with, and also suffocating their experience, because it's like actually you're not allowing them to almost be themselves. You're turning them into a almost a reflection of what you assume them to be or what you assume they need or whatever.
Yeah,
you make good points. I think I worry a lot about people feeling welcomed or feeling like they belong, that they have space. But I like what you're saying about how we can be pushing, we can inadvertently be pressuring them by trying to intentionally make them belong.
And then I imagine if they arrive like, for example, if it was a group and then they end up feeling like, oh, this, I don't really belong here. And then they leave. If we're really attached to that person belonging, that's going to be a whole like other onslaught of like a feeling of failure or letting down or something that really it was like, there was no problem. It just wasn't a match. I think I'm growing in a capacity to kind of like hold things tenderly, but lightly, even in how the connections unfold or in how, like how the belonging is, places where I think I belong, those I might have to let go of those, or people that belong with me might not always be the case. And like, it doesn't, there's also an evolution to belonging. So it transforming over time and changing doesn't mean that, like, can we do that softly so that there's not an excommunication on the other side? It can just be like a recognition of shifts and change. I think I'd like to experience and see more of that and how we unbelong ourselves.
Conscious unbelonging. A conscious uncoupling. Have you
heard? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's really, yeah. And I think even just like considering my own experiences of like what I need in order to feel like I belong to something is time and space and not being, I guess, the intensity. Like this, and like it's a funny thing because I've probably done the thing that would drive me away from places before, where it's like that intense attachment to, oh, someone's here, like I'm gonna make them feel like they belong. And it's like, for me, when I'm going into a situation, it's, I guess, coming back to that word we used last month, integration, and like the gradual integration of like kind of warming up into a place or kind of getting, like, I think highly sensitive people would definitely sort of relate to this idea of like needing to observe and mm-hmm. and know, you know, like, what are the potential risks here? What are the, like, even at an unconscious level, you're sort of scanning everything, observing everything to just feel that sense of safety, which obviously can be implemented, like it can be set conditionally by people, but it's also other stuff that it's the in between the lines, like, you know, what am I noticing, the vibes between different people and just the vibe of the room, the vibe of the place. And that takes time. And so, yeah, anytime I feel kind of rushed into a place and it's like, right, you belong here, like get you signed up, let's do all of this. Like, whoa, whoa. And that I'm more likely to just run away. Like that's too intense. But yeah, drawing on my own preferences, probably.
The attachment of the feeling of safety to belonging is big for me. And I would say that if belonging feels like anything, it is that sense of safety. Mm-hmm. Of knowing that it's safe to be who I am and I'm not going to be harmed mm-hmm. to any great extent. Because I think that my experience of being in the world is quite the opposite of that. And I think that has to do with how I've always felt like I didn't belong, is that I've always felt very harmed by the world, the human world, I should mm-hmm. hasten to add. Not the natural or animal world. Always felt like I belonged there real well, but
what about mosquitoes?
I will kill a mosquito now, but when I was a kid, couldn't even bear to see a mosquito killed.
Kendra, I'm curious if there's any like practices or practical things that you find help when you, if you're like to have that kind of like returning to yourself. Belonging feeling. Is there something that you do that helps you come back there?
Yeah, but I'm not sure it's entirely healthy. I'll self-isolate, which I do a lot. I mean, I live alone, so it's fairly easy. I work from home. I'll just go into my space and be alone. What about you guys?
I do that. Yeah.
But I'm not the only one.
Yes, it's one of those, I don't know how I feel about, I think the level, I know the level that I get to where it's like, yeah, you need to re-socialize yourself right now. But it's like, no, I'm beyond the pale. I'm 2 weeks on my own. And no. Right. That usually happens with a creative, some sort of creative project, which I then use as an excuse not to see anyone. But yeah, no, I withdraw.
Yeah. How about you, Lindsay?
Yeah, I think time alone is also, and like back at my house is very helpful. And going outside, like going for a longer walk, leaving my phone at home, like getting as, I find connection with nature and not having like headphones in or my phone, or just like having the tactile experiences as much as I can, like lands me back in my body. And I find that it helps me not feel as like scattered, and so sort of like collects me back into my body, which is like, I think the center of what I want to belong in, like the smallest sphere of my belonging would be my physical shell. And then it kind of goes out to like my family, close relationships, and then my community. But like, it all feels like if I don't feel like I'm belonging on one sphere, it's kind of like I just shrink them down until I do feel like I belong, then I can work my way back out. And so the smallest one I could shrink it to would be my skin. So something I can do to really feel that body again, whether it's like a cold swim or a walk or yoga or like something that is just physical, I think gets me back to feeling like I belong in this shell. And then I might be able to stretch that to feel like I belong in my relationships. And then like I can work my way back out. I think that's probably, I never really described it in those onion layers, but I think that's how I probably work with it.
It's a nice image.
Yeah, it is. And maybe I'm doing something similar by paring it down to the very essential, which is just myself in an empty room.
Yeah.
I mean, I just love that feeling, honestly. I said before that maybe my coping mechanism isn't very healthy, but I'm not sure that's true. I'm not sure it is unhealthy, because I'm a writer and that's what I do. Like it always has to come back to that, just me alone in an empty room. Mm-hmm. I guess that doesn't make sense to say it that way though, because the room isn't empty. It has me in it. And it, when I say I'm alone, that kind of implies that the room is otherwise empty of people, but it's has full stuff of you. In it. Yeah.
The room's full of you.
It just struck me that maybe
full of the worlds that you're creating through your writing. Yeah. And I mean, as you both just talking, I was thinking, actually, these kinds of conversations are, for me, really energizing way to feel a sense of belonging. Just even like the kind of vulnerability of sharing these things. It's like, does anyone else get that? And then realizing, yeah, you do. And you're the other side of the world. And that's where that sense of kind of shared belonging in the world feels very real to me, of like, yeah, no, we're kind of alone together.
Oh, I have a poem from David White I wanted to read.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, yeah, do.
Definitely.
I added this.
David White.
Yeah, so I'll just read this. You must learn one thing. The world was made to be free in. Give up all of the other worlds except the one to which you belong. Sometimes it takes darkness and the sweet confinement of your aloneness to learn. Anything or anyone that does not bring you alive is too small for you.
That's, I think, he did an interview with Krista Tippett on the podcast On Being, which I highly recommend listening to. But I think that was one of the poems that was read on that podcast episode. And interestingly enough, that poem is the one that gave me the character arc of one of my characters named Esme in my novel, The Gentle History. So It's interesting that you chose that poem to read, because I am submitting my novel in a week to this competition. So maybe that's a sign. It's magical thinking for you.
Look at
Beautiful.
There you go. What a wonderful way to end. Well, this has been really great. Thank you, Kendra and Lindsay, for hanging out. Three-way conversation.
Yeah. Thank you, too.
This is great.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that. This sets up our 2021 month of belonging beautifully, I'd say. And we're going to be exploring, the stuff that we've discussed here in more depth in the coming weeks inside the Haven membership. Also, anything else that this hopefully stimulates as well for people, other ways of thinking about belonging, looking at belonging, aspects of this that we've missed. It'd just be great to be using this as a thread in those discussions and in other areas of the creativity and interest groups around the community itself. So if you want to explore this in more depth, then and you're not a member already, then come and try it out for free for 7 days. Just go to the-haven.co and you can sign up, become a member, get 1 week. You can cancel any time, if it's not for you. Check it out, get involved, and see if it fits, see if it feels good to you. It'd be lovely to see you in there and to welcome you in and to explore all this stuff with you. We'll be back again in a month's time to explore November's theme, which is serenity. And I guess if I don't speak to you before then, have a good one. Take care. Bye-bye.